So in rural Oahu, Popo and Poha were going for a walk like they did every day. Popo was the grandmother and Poha the grandson. And day after day, Popo would point to the bright horses and the beautiful cows in the field. But for some reason, her little grandson, Poha, showed no reaction whatsoever. She was expecting the joy of a toddler, but she got nothing. And day after day, she got so disappointed, worried, and confused. One day, she happened to be kneeling next to Poha on one of these walks, and she looked from where he was, as she was crouched down, and she realized all he could see was tall grasses. So she lifted him up, and he pointed, and he laughed, and he clapped at the beautiful vision that she thought he was looking at all along. It isn't until we change vantage points, until we look to see what others see, that we begin to understand how they're responding, not in ways that we would expect, until we look. And then we see together a new way, and together we can point and clap and laugh at what we see together. But the thing is that sometimes we forget, right, to look at those other vantage points. Or maybe we just conveniently forget because we really don't want to, you know. But either way, it creates this way of being that begins to disconnect us. We start to feel disappointed and confused or worried even when people don't see what we see. If we see something beautiful or we see something concerning. And so we further separate ourselves, sometimes judge one another and begin to pull away. And this can turn into an adversarial situation. This week's talk is in message and part that we're working with in our series, More Together Than Alone, is called How We Meet Adversity. And so an adversary is not as strong a word as enemy. An adversary can be like a temporary situation where we just have opposition or conflict with one another. And the same with adversity. It's important to remember that when we have adversity in our lives, when we have challenging situations, things like power outages and fires and earthquakes and things like that that you might be familiar with, that those things are temporary conditions, that they don't define us, that they aren't the ongoing truth. And so even just knowing that can help shift us a little bit, help us to recognize what it is that we're dealing with. If you think of them this way, think of them as OMGs. You know what that is? It's an opportunity for my growth. Gotcha, didn't I? You could go either way on it, though, really, right? And both ways are true, because there is sometimes is a little bit of a surprise or a shock, but then there is, oh, I see. Okay, this is an opportunity for my growth. And what can I do with that? How will I take advantage of the opportunity that is before me? You know, there may be adversity that comes our way that creates periods of grief, or that takes longer than something very temporary in order to resolve, to return to wholeness. So patience helps us along the way, right, with those kinds of things. But we just stay the course. And staying the course is a part of how we meet adversity in a way that is productive, in a way that helps us with our own sanity and our own mental health, physical health, emotional health, and spiritual health. And that is an important thing that we need, right? All those aspects of being. Sometimes it helps to look at people for inspiration who have made it through incredible adversity. People like Viktor Frankl, who was a survivor of the Holocaust. Viktor Frankl said that what is to give light must endure burning. I don't know if I believe that we always have to endure burning in order to give life, but if the burning has come, it sure is comforting knowing that the light will follow, right? And it's not just a comforting thought. It's not just to soothe us. It's the truth. Because what is absolute reality, what is ever-present and permanent reality, is the truth of the divine spirit that is light. I am light. We are the I am. We are that light. We can cast that light upon our own paths in the dark and cast that light for others in times of darkness. We can and we do. We don't always hear about all the light. We don't always hear about all the great stories. But we live them every day, don't we? In the small miracles that happen to us. It's always helpful to have a practice where we ask one another, what was the highlight of your day? Or what was the highlight of your, Brenly asked me yesterday, of your week. I was like, week? Oh, wow, that's a tough one. Go back the whole week. But it lifts us up to remind ourselves of those moments of light that happen throughout our days, throughout our moments of living. And that lifts each other up when we can share from that place. So in these times, which are adverse times, we've got a lot going on. It's okay to name it what it is, but we don't have to dwell on that or make it a dark cloud for ourselves. We can just say, okay, so there are some things going on that are pretty challenging. And so what do we need to do about that in order to shore up how we will move through adversity? Is to look at our responsibility, our ability to respond. How do we respond? It's important to look at what your fallback is, your own personal way of responding. One thing we can do is instead of asking, why me, or why did this happen, we can move to a more productive question, which is, how will I meet this? The whys often, cause us to go into more difficulty and more darkness and depression, but the hows give us light. They uplift us. They empower us to look and see what is available to me. Where can I go? How can I walk through this illness, this natural disaster, this whatever, you name it, whatever is difficult for you in your life? And so then the question becomes, too, how do I tend to deal with diversity? What are my kind of go-to ways? There are three common human responses. We know the fight or flight, right? There's also one called comply. So maybe you're one who tends to be compliant. And being compliant is a great thing when the policies and rules and ideas that we are complying with are working for us and for the greater good. But there are times when those policies and rules and ideas are outdated or don't work for everyone or that are hurting us, and some of us may continue to still kind of put our head down and comply. And it's those times that we really need to look at, maybe there's a different way. Because the truth is, we might do that out of fear or to think we don't really have a voice or it doesn't really matter, our vote doesn't count. We won't be heard, whatever it is that those stories we tell ourselves, it's not the truth. The truth is we all have the power of the divine within us. We all have the power of truth that we can speak and act from. And so not to be out of that place within us, you know how it feels when you're out of integrity. There's just that, this sort of like push-pull within yourself. You know how it is when you go against yourself, right? By just kind of swallowing what's given and putting your head down and going on. So maybe that's a tendency, and we all might move through any of these tendencies, but there might be one you tend to gravitate toward. Compliance might be one, when compliance isn't really what's called for. Or maybe it's to strike back. Maybe you're a fiery person, and your first line of defense is, when I'm hurt, I'm going to hurt back, right? Before you even know it, you're saying things or doing things that are fiery. And these often, we know the old adage, right? When we strike back in revenge, when an eye for an eye, the whole world goes blind, right? It's not real productive. But what is productive in that is our fire, is our passion. And so if we can redirect to the thing that we want, if we can move toward and be and take a stand for that which we are for rather than that which we are against, we'll get a lot of traction that way. You know, even in an interpersonal relationship, when you, instead of lashing out or lashing back, if you realize, well, what I'm really for here is love. What I'm really for here is connection. What I'm really for here is fun, is companionship, is joy. And so instead of lashing back, I think I'll breathe for a minute. I think I'll breathe through that and I'll find my passion. And I'll respond from the passion and the truth that is within me. Or maybe you're somebody who tends to flee, who tends to leave. Maybe you leave physically, maybe you leave emotionally, maybe you leave mentally, maybe you even try to leave spiritually, which is almost an impossibility, because wherever you go, there you are. Yeah, did I not say ye are gods, Jesus said, reminded us of. And so there is that divine with us wherever we go. But the fleeing is really true, that many of us do the leave one thinking, well, this one will cause the least amount of harm. And actually, I think it could be the most insidious and dangerous of all three. Because how it goes is something like this. We start to disconnect. We create a little distance. Then there's a little bit more separation. We tell a story. We begin to judge. We have further separation. You know, separation, if we really use the term sin in unity, which just means mistake, it would be the greatest of these, right? Because the idea of separation, the belief in separation is based on a belief that says, I am separate from the divine because I can be separate from all. So it's operating out of this false idea of separation. And the thing is about it that it can get worse and worse is because we can move into what has caused the most horrific things in our history and in our current times, and that is the dehumanization of one another. So the more we move like that out of our pain and our fear, and we begin to find scapegoat groups, and then together we sort of find each other, and there's a collective pain and fear that people kind of have the pseudo connection around, and then they start to dehumanize, we start to, as human beings, dehumanize one another. It may start innocent enough, you know? You don't like somebody's views or what they're saying, and so you sort of call them a name. Oh, so big deal, you called them a name, right? And then you begin to see the caricatures of these people or this person, and you begin to laugh about that, and you begin to push them out on social media. And see, then we begin to create this idea of this being or this group is less than human. And you know what happens when it gets going, when that snowballs? You know what happens. Genocide, slavery, all kinds of horrible things happen. I know it sounds dramatic, but it really is dramatic. So let's not set one tiny foot on the path of dehumanization. Let's instead use all of the time and energy and passion that we have to take a stand for the truth of the divine, take a stand for love, for what we're for peace, for harmony, for joy, for a sustainable world for all. Isn't that what we all want in our heart of hearts? I know it is. And so maybe some people are asleep, and maybe sometimes we fall asleep, but as soon as we wake up is the opportunity to say, I will not waste another moment on that kind of draining, separating, disconnecting energy that can lead to dehumanization and horrible things. I won't go. I won't contribute to that adversity. So let's all make a pact that as we walk out of Sunday when we're feeling really good and together and community and connected, that we don't go out and get on social media or with each other or whatever it may be and start creating that kind of divide. Let's not contribute to it. We don't have to because we always have a choice. And so our choices bring us back to truth. Charles Fillmore, our co-founder, said this about evil, which is always a question that comes up, something we talked about in our Unity Basics class today, this week. If God is our first principle, right? All goodness, all power, all truth, all love. How is it possible that evil could exist in the world? And it's a kind of a conundrum because you look around the world and you say, well, that sure seems kind of evil, and that seems pretty cruel. So how is it that this God that is all-loving and all-powerful and everywhere present is absent over there? Well, the truth is God cannot be absent, this all-powerful, all-truthful. That truth still stands as a truth. And Charles Fillmore, our co-founder, offers us this understanding of what is evil. He says, evil is a parasite. It has no permanent life of its own. Its whole existence depends on the life that it borrows from its parent. And when its connection with the parent is severed, nothing remains. So see, evil is just a thing that hangs out and gets fed. If we choose to feed it, it can live. Temporarily, of course, but it can live and spread. If we say, no, I sever that, I don't go there, I am light. I choose to stand in light, I choose to see from light, I choose to be the light, then it's a whole different world. It's a whole different life. It's a whole different experience that each of us will have. And together, when each of us, one person, has that kind of strength to stand in the truth in the face of adversity, and then another, and then another, and then our whole group here, and then another whole group comes, and then, you know how it goes, right? It's the critical mass that tips the scale that adversity falls away. It's like the rain comes and the fire's over. And we are the bringers of that light. We are the bringers of that living water, if we so choose. So anybody see Harriet yet, the movie Harriet? I think it just came out. A few of you saw it, yeah. So it's about the woman that you may know, Harriet Tubman, who was the most actually famous conductor of the Underground Railroad during times of slavery before the Civil War, just before the Civil War, and into the Civil War, I think, a little bit too. She lived to be 91. So remarkably, at 24, she escaped slavery where she was being held and got, I think she traveled 100 miles to freedom. And then she went back and got her family. And then she went back and got more people and friends. And then she just went back and got folks, whoever wanted to come. And over again, she never lost anybody. She freed 300 slaves. All kinds of adversity you would not even believe. And still stayed true. But here's her secret, a secret that we all know in this room, that it was based, everything she did was based first on spirit, on prayer, on spiritual visions that she received, on guidance that she was given. And so over and over again, she would turn within and she would pray. And one of her prayers was up there on the screen a minute ago. Lord, I'm going to hold steady onto you, and you've got to see me through. I bet she prayed that one a lot. But it teaches us, right, to hold steady, to move to that place of spiritual center in the face of adversity, to be the calm in the center of the storm, because we are one with that spirit. And from there, we get our strength and our resilience and our clarity and our wisdom and everything that we need to move through any kind of challenge that may come our way. So she also, besides praying and freeing all these slaves, and through the work that she did, she spoke truth. She began to speak more freely with other people who were doing similar work, and to help them stay the course, to stay awakened and inspired. And of course, she acted with lots and lots of courage. And it's really those three things that help kind of lay out the path for us for success in the face of adversity. Pray first, always, and throughout, landing in that centered place that strengthens us. But also free your voice to speak the truth, the honest truth from your heart. And then have the courage to take the actions that you are guided to take. I know it's simple, but not necessarily easy, right? Adversity is not necessarily easy. But we're called here to be in these times, to do what is ours to do, whatever comes our way. And we can do it because we are prepared to do it, because we are children of God and we are of this very same substance that is spirit. So Mark Nepo, the author of our book, said, by facing adversity with an open and strong heart, we override our inhuman impulses and demand that the inhuman become human again. So we override those impulses we talked about earlier that might be to check out, to numb out, to separate, to disconnect, or to strike back in revenge, or to just kind of roll over in compliance. And instead, we stay strong, we keep our heart open and strong, and we're willing and able then to override those inhuman impulses and to grab hold of and bring forth again the human impulses that will heal us, that will restore us. So natural disasters, what do we do in the face of those? Are we the ones who freak out or the ones who calm? And sometimes when maybe one or the other, it doesn't make us wrong or bad. We're just on the path, right? To keep learning how we can contribute. Can we be a helper? Will we be a uniter? Will we only take care of me and mine? Or will we open our hearts and our doors to help others as well? And then we're reminded in the face of these things of all the helpers, right? As Mr. Rogers talked about, the firefighters and the first responders and the neighbors and the friends. And we connect with each other in ways we might not had if there weren't these adverse circumstances in front of us. So there's always good, right? We can always look for the good, pull forth the good, and unite with one another, whatever the situation may be. Mark says that in our response to adversity, there is always one more hand that gives than takes, one more voice than all those who are silenced. Do you have the courage? I know you do. Will you be willing to unleash that courage to be the one more hand that gives, or the one more voice that raises your voice for those who are silenced? That's what we're really called into. It's action, but it's also based in this deep spiritual grounding. And it's from that deep spiritual grounding that any action springs forth with a greater ease and a greater sense of support. So whether we face adversity in our interpersonal relationships or we face adversity in the world, the steps are the same. They're the same basic three essential success steps that Harriet Tubman took to free 300 slaves. Liberty or death, she said. I'll take liberty any day. And so that's true for us too, isn't it? That we are faced with that choice always. We can go to sleep or we can wake up. Those are our choices, really. And in the awakening is liberty. In the awakening is the greater good. And that, of course, is our good as well. So as we rest in this, as we see the OMGs, the opportunities for my growth, we gain greater clarity. And we can then begin, like Popo did so long ago for Poha, we can lift each other up. Sometimes we'll be lifted, and sometimes we'll be the lifter. We can look from another vantage point and see a whole different world, a whole different place of possibility, as well as the beauty that already exists right now. Right here. It's easy to see it. We just have to look with those eyes and to find it. So we can indeed meet adversity with unity. I know we do. I know we will. And I know it's going to get stronger every day with communities like ours. Let's know this together. I meet adversity with unity. And so it is.